Ah, the snooze button. Our old friend. You've showed us patience, postponing the monotony of morning traffic, putting off the bland and boring breakfast for just 5 more minutes. Thank you for all you've done, but your services are no longer required. There is finally a breakfast worth waking up for. The Triple Cheese and Hash Brown Breakfast Burrito with provolone, cheddar, pepper jack, and a crispy hash brown. Taste it before it's gone at Jack in the Box. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Jaden Sterling, international best-selling author of The Alchemy of True Success. And thanks so much for tuning in to Soul to Profit Radio, bringing business to spirituality and spirituality to business. Each show, we are committed to helping you, our enlightened audience, discover your purpose, share your gifts, and monetize your message. Life is short, so let's get started. Hello, all my amazing listeners from around the world and beyond. I'm your host, Jaden Sterling, and welcome to Soul to Profit Radio, where we share tips and strategies to assist you in filling your soul and your wallet. Well, spring has certainly sprung, and it's a time of transition, new beginnings, change, and lots of growth. And I have a fantastic guest for you today. It's none other than the Money Mama. And she's probably going to laugh when she hears me call her that. It's Heather Wagenhals. She's a keynote speaker, author, and host of the top-rated wealth radio shows on the internet. And before I introduce Heather to you, I just want to pick a card from my Manifesting Wealth and Wisdom Daily Oracle cards, because I feel that Something's just giving me a little ping to pick a card from this deck. It's called Manifesting Wealth and Wisdom Daily Oracle Cards, and it's a deck of cards I put together a couple years ago, and it's 44 cards, and it helps people figure out, you know, what's going on in life and what they need to know at that time and how to navigate financial situations, but also personal and spiritual situations as well. So the card that popped out of the deck here is the Negotiate card. And it says, the universe is reminding you that everything is negotiable and is also making you aware that it's possible for all parties involved in every negotiation to have their needs met. So the action step is, speak your truth and come from a place of integrity in every deal, situation, and relationship you have. When negotiating, ask the other people involved, what is the most important thing for them to receive from the deal? See how you can assist them in getting what they want while you get what you want. Remember, often better terms can benefit you more than paying a lower price. And that comes in if you're doing a real estate deal or buying a business. You know, something to that effect, that price isn't always the number one thing to be concerned about, but terms of the deal are much more important. So hopefully that's helpful for everyone. And I'm just really excited about bringing Heather on the show. So let me read you a short bio about Heather. Heather, for the past 20 years, she has worked to empower others with her social blend of personal finance and wealth-building techniques. She has refined this process further over the years, and now, for the first time, she published her highly coveted 7 Elements for Self-Empowerment in this powerful joint venture of esteemed authors, and it's also the last published original work from business philosopher, the late Jim Rohn. And I love Jim Rohn and all of his work. He was fantastic. Heather is also extremely down-to-earth and highly successful, and you'll love to hear what she says about money. So, Heather, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Jaden. I'm so thrilled to be a part of your show and sitting on the other side of the microphone for a change.
I know. We were just laughing because you had me on your show. When was that? A couple months ago, I think.
Yes, for the launch of your fabulous book. Oh, my gosh. So many people have told me how your book is touching their lives in so many ways that, you know, it's kind of incalculable, the impact that you have. And I love the whole second brain thing and the go with your gut. It worked so well. And I was so excited to hear the feedback from everyone that had an opportunity to invest in your work.
Heather, thank you for saying that. That's so nice of you. You know, oftentimes we don't get feedback after we put out a book and things like that. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's you work really hard to create something and hope it has impact. But unlike a speech where you get applause or boos, you know where you are. When you kind of write, it's kind of out there, and you got to wait for that to kind of come back. So it's my pleasure to deliver that good news for you.
Awesome. Well, you know, when I think of you, I think of someone who is really comfortable with big money. And, you know, but I was curious, I was wondering, have you always had a high degree of comfort around money?
It's an interesting question that you ask. You know, on my show, when I talk to people, I always say that I was so poor growing up that I had to envy the dirt poor kids because they had dirt. And it's true, wow. But I always knew inside, I didn't know how, I didn't know when, I just knew that I was going to be a millionaire, whatever that was, in whatever form or shape it was. So talking big money, working with big money, I worked for stockbrokers, investment advisors, I worked for venture capitalists, I worked for the gamut, you know, of big money, M&A, yet it's funny that you ask that question because I am comfortable with big, big money. And talking millions and billions, but I was completely uncomfortable with the little money in my bank account.
Yeah, good point. So speak to that. How did you make the leap from seeing the little money in the bank account to manifesting millions of dollars?
Well, it wasn't really a leap. It was like a stumble, a fall, a scrape the knee, lick the wound, get back up again, stumble, fall. It took a little bit to get the momentum right. And you know, I've always been big into personal development. And because I had a dropout of college, I always felt like I wasn't quite good enough. You know, my mother had a double mastectomy when I was a child, and she was having problems with the silicone. And so I had to drop out of college to go work to pay for all these surgeries and to get all this medical stuff that she couldn't get taken care of on her insurance. My brother was on academic scholarship, and being the oldest, it was always up to me to fix things financially. So I went to work. I left school, and I went to work. And I didn't need to be a college graduate to be a stockbroker, but I was always in fear of not being smart enough or good enough to like everybody else. So I read and read and read, and like I knew all this stuff, but for some reason, because of my crappy programming as a kid about money, I couldn't get over those dynamics that ruined me. You know, I had no idea that rich people didn't like max out their credit cards and only make minimum payments. You know, I watched them pay on plastic, but I didn't know that at the end of the month, they paid it off every month. I didn't know that they paid cash for their cars, and if they couldn't pay cash, they didn't buy a depreciating asset financed on terms that made them pay even more for a depreciating asset than what the original price tag was. I didn't know any of those things. I just kind of watched what they did, and I thought, okay, well, I want to do what rich people do, but I emulated all the wrong things. You know, I bought all the expensive clothes on credit. I leveraged my loafers. I financed my Ferragamos. I did everything wrong that I could, right. And I kept doing it wrong. And back when I was doing it wrong, it's before the credit laws had changed. So there was a time where you could make a minimum payment on your credit card, and your balance still went up because it wasn't enough to cover the interest charges for the month.
Wow.
So I just kept digging this deep, deep hole. And I had a spouse at the time that felt like my income level was his income level. And so he spent at my income level. So we had two of us spending at my income level, but only one of us making it. And it wasn't until I was noticing that the rich people I was making money for in the stock market, because, you know, in the 90s, you could throw anything at the wall and it was going to make money.
Yeah.
That they were getting richer, but for some reason I wasn't. And so, you know, I sat down with one of my, like, mentors, one of my trusted advisors, and I said, what am I doing wrong? And when he showed me what I was doing wrong, I still didn't get it. Because I knew what I was doing wrong, but I couldn't get out of my own way. Because I had these beliefs about money from growing up, this lack, you know, my dad left. You know, my mother always had 20 jobs. Instead of one good paying job, she always had 20 different jobs. And I had like 20 different jobs. And, you know, and I was making a little money at all of those jobs. And I had one job that I could make big money at, but I was making okay money at. And it wasn't until that I was able to go back and address those behaviors for what they were, really, not what I perceived them to be as a child, where you don't have all of that information, you're just kind of imprinted and you can't really question stuff. Once I was able to identify those limiting beliefs that I had about money and resolve them internally, where, you know, how you get that rotten feeling in your gut, or you know when you get upset or sick or feel guilty, or like all of a sudden when you get angry and you get this rush of blood to like your hands and fists and you just want to choke the daylights out of somebody. Like, I had to process all of that that was so deeply embedded and hidden so far in. It took me a long time. But as I resolved each issue as it came up, as I was able to find these limiting beliefs and work through them, it wasn't until I did that that I was able to start experiencing a growth in my bank account. And some people are like, oh, my God, that's so existential. That's so spiritual. I don't buy into that. Because if you're looking at it from a critical, rational eye, you think, well, that's dumb. That doesn't make sense. But you have to allow yourself, I think, a bit of an open mind to understand how the brain functions and what your body is doing energetically. Because we're just, you know, we're a big ball of atoms that are moving constantly. And so until we kind of address that as individuals, we can't move on. And at least for me, when I was able to start resolving all of those challenges I had about money and those beliefs, the self-sabotage went away, and then the wealth came. And it stayed. It was sustainable at that point, where before it wasn't. I could make big gobs of money. I've always been able to do that. But hanging on to it was always the other part.
Yeah, and what I've learned in my work and in my life, there's a different energy associated with what it takes to attract it versus what it takes to keep it and grow it. And I think oftentimes we have this, what I call financial blind spot, that plays into, you know, whether it's greed or self-sabotage, you know, the fear of success or fear of failure, because those are two distinctly different things. But I'm wondering, you know, and that's a challenge too. People have to become really conscious, and it sounds like that's part of the process that you went through, is to become conscious and aware of how they are sabotaging their success. And I believe we all have these financial blind spots. And for me in my life, I call it flat out greed. You know, when I'm in the process of being greedy with a stock investment, I notice that I really suffer financially when that happens.
Well, I mean, take a look at what does greed come from?
Ego.
Ego. And what drives ego?
I think.
Fear.
Totally. Absolutely.
Fear. So greed is just another form of fear of lack or fear of loss. So if you think that greed is your issue, let's take a look back to find out when you perhaps were imprinted with this like hoarding, greedy mentality. Can you think of a time where you experienced loss in your childhood, or where you had something that you earned but it was taken away from you? Can you go back in time and maybe find a specific instance?
Yeah, and I'm excited. I feel like I'm getting like free therapy on the radio, so thank you for this.
Absolutely. My pleasure to coach you.
From the Money Mama. Did you like me calling you that, by the way?
Yes. I'm trying to figure out how to birth millioniplets, right?
Millioniplets is right. That's the key.
I don't want triplets or quadruplets. I want millioniplets. Is that a word?
It works totally. You're in the flow of it. But, to answer your question, it's a really good question, and I had to ask myself that too because I noticed, and I'm not a greedy person. I'm a very generous person. But I noticed with my stock investments over the years, I have seen a pattern develop, and it's about every 10 years or so where I'll invest in a stock, and literally it will do exactly what I intend for it to do. It'll double overnight or within a short period of 6 months or 8 months. And I'll look at it and I'll go, yeah, I probably should sell it, but I think I'm going to hold on to it because it's going to go higher. So I noticed at that moment, I've got this little fear of actually losing out on something, thinking that it's going to go higher. Well, if it goes from 15 to 28 overnight, obviously, clearly it's going to go to 50, And so your question is good. I did have to go back and I looked at my childhood and I realized when I was 12, when my father left, we didn't have any money. And he, interestingly enough, he came from a very affluent background, but was is and still is to this day, miserly with money, not generous at all. Whereas my mother came from a very poor upbringing, a lineage of factory workers and coal mine workers, and had very little money, but was very generous with it. So while my parents were together, I saw a conflicting message with money. One parent is very generous, the other one was not. However, when my father left and was not supporting us at all, we suffered the consequence. And at one time, I remember, as I take a big gulp here, I remember my mom coming to me, actually didn't even give me any warning, but ended up taking my coin collection and stamp collection to sell them to buy groceries for the family. So, that experience, I feel like, and I remember at that time thinking, wow, I will never let that happen to me again. And yet I see, repeating a pattern, and this happened recently where $100,000 stock investment, originally invested $60,000 and it went to about $120,000 literally within 6 months, just as I intended. And I never sold the stock. And then news came out, it was a biopharmaceutical company where, oops, we're killing more people than we're helping. The stock goes, literally, not funny, but.
Details.
Yeah, right, minor details. And the stock just gets decimated by Wall Street. And consequently, so does the investment that we had in the stock. And, thankfully I had the most amazing wife who just says, hey, well, there's your lesson, learn from it this time. And so I am clearly taking strides to learn from that mistake and to recognize it for what it is. And up until this point, it was a financial blind spot until I bring consciousness to it and awareness. But I think, mine, I see clearly comes from that. Others may come from, like I had a client recently and we were talking and she said that when she was younger, she was very poor. And but read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, which I know you love as well.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing life transformative book when it comes to money. And she said, so she did what Napoleon Hill said. She wrote down a goal. So within 2 months, she decided she wanted $20,000. Okay, that was her goal. Wrote it down, was very clear about it. And sure enough, within 2 months, she got a check from a distant aunt who they weren't really that close, but there was a check for $20,000 in a letter. And the letter said, I really am disappointed in you that you don't keep in touch with me and I never hear from you. And so the letter in one respect was making her feel badly and laying a big old guilt trip on her for not keeping in touch. But then here's this money out of the blue, right? So So this woman realized, so she's 21 years old, and she was not in a mind frame of being able to receive that money. So she tore up the check. So, tore up the check, didn't receive the money, and waited 1 year to ask her aunt for the money back. She, oh, oops, by the way, could I get $20,000 that you sent me back? And the aunt did it. Sure enough, she gave her the money back. But the revealing thing is, my client said to me, ever since then, and this happened like 22 years ago for her, ever since then, she's never been able to earn more than $20,000 a year. Yeah, so that was her financial sticking point or her blind spot, you know, so we went back through that. But yeah, to answer your question, you know, I think we all have them, these financial blind spots. It's a matter of do we have the courage to look at them and say, all right, you know, so what do I do, Heather? I shared with you my financial blind spot and my childhood experience of things being taken from me. But so why can't I accept a profit on a big stock investment like that?
Well, I'm going to go with a couple of different things here because of what you shared with your dad. So let's start with the rational, reasonable information that I would have shared with my clients who would have said, oh my God, I started with 60, it went to 100. I thought, I didn't take my profit off of the table, and so now I lost out. Well, technically, you would have only had that profit had you sold.
Yeah.
Okay. So you really didn't have that $40,000 gain. So now you don't have to sweat that you lost that kind of money because it wasn't really yours.
Okay.
You know, until you actually sell, it's not really yours. So you have to, you know, when people say, oh, you know, well, my house, and they talk about, you know, the real estate market and the real estate values, and well, it was worth blah, blah, blah. Unless you take it off the table, it was never worth that. Okay.
True. Yeah.
So you can start unburdening yourself from the guilt of losing money because you didn't have it. It was only yours if you took it off the table. So you never took it off the table. So you were still in that gambling mode. But let me say this. So dad leaves. Dad leaving is a tough gig. I know my papa did. A lot of my friends' papas did. And we all have similar issues. And you know what that issue is? Worthiness. So let's go back to what I just shared about the it wasn't your money. You didn't take it off the table when it was at your $40,000 profit, perhaps because it was just a number, it was just floating out there, and you may not have felt worthy of that money, and that's why you let it ride. It probably wasn't a greed thing at all. It was probably a worth issue because Papa left, Papa was tight with the cash, you know, that equates to worth stuff, you know. That was always my big question with my dad. It's like, well, you know, and I had so many problems dating, you know, and I couldn't figure out, you know, why men didn't like me. I mean, all I have done is to work on myself to become the total package, you know. I cook, I clean, I sew, I fix cars, I ride motorcycles, I race cars. Like, I do all these things. I play football, I do all these cool guy things, and then I keep all the cool chick stuff, and I'm like, I've made myself the total package. Oh, and I'm an excellent communicator, and I work on brain stuff and psychology. So why wouldn't I be marketable? And it's because I never felt worthy of a man's love, because why would I? If my own dad, my own male flesh and blood, whom I'm supposed to use as my guide to teach me how to behave as a woman toward a man, was missing, and he's my barometer for what men should be. And so I was picking all these crappy men who would, what would they do? Walk out of my life. What would they do if they were around? Ignore me. So I picked a guy just like my dad, even though I really didn't even have him around growing up. And if my own dad didn't find value in me, his own child, his flesh and blood, his offspring, his potential legacy, how could I find value in myself? That's how I interpreted that. And so, you know, because it didn't matter how much money I made. You know, I remember sitting at a buffet restaurant for lunch with him, and I was 25, and I remember it like it was yesterday. And we were sitting there, and I had just flown in, okay, on my friend's private plane, okay, to come, like, be back here. And I was running around with a bunch of movie stars in our generation at that time. And, you know, my girlfriends were dating, you know, all these high-profile people. And I'm making a ton of money. Now, granted, I dropped out of college, but it was to take care of my mom. And my dad, I made more money in 2 months than my dad had ever made in any one calendar year. And he's sitting there sharing how disappointed he is in me because do you realize, Heather, if you would have gotten a job at Target when you graduated high school, you'd be running the place by now? And I'm like, Dad, I was like, I just flew in on a private plane, which the fuel alone cost more than your paycheck this month. And it just, wow. it couldn't connect. I couldn't get like that approval. And so like, I just had to go out and make bigger money and bigger money. And the bigger the money, the bigger I spent because I was trying to buy a worthiness that I perceived I could earn in some way. And I figured that maybe money was the deal. Like if I wasn't lovable, maybe my dad could at least respect my business acumen, but I couldn't get that out of him either. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps you didn't take your money off the table because you were dealing with a worth issue that's tied to the money and the debt.
You know, yeah, and I've thought about that, and it's a good point. However, you know, during my years as a financial advisor, I was in the top 1% income earners and like at 26 and made a fortune in that industry and then made even more money in real estate. So I've never had difficulty. It's never been a self-esteem thing in terms of making large sums of money. It just
but making it and keeping it are different.
Yeah,
because making it is, you know, and making it for your customers is the easy part. Mm-hmm. Okay, but when it's actually becomes, when it goes from being earned, which, you know, it's money taken from other people, you know, as remuneration for our efforts, then somehow this switch flips when it goes from earned to owned. And it's when it becomes ours, it's a different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Speak to that a little bit.
So when we invest our blood, sweat, and tears into the money that we've earned, once that wealth transfers as a value we've provided for others, so it's still kind of an external thing, and it flips into our bank account, it's now ours. It's an internal thing. And what do we know about the brain? Well, first, we've got to go through our survival brain, so that's fight, freeze, or flee, when we go to make a decision. And then we have an emotion about the event that's transpiring. And then, and only then, if we maintain our physiology in a calm, cool, collected way, can we get to that rational, reasonable third brain to make decisions. And half the time, when we do get there, we're making decisions about the emotion we've had about an event, not the event itself. And when an event occurs, because behavior is programmed and subconscious, if it is remotely similar to an experience we've already had, we're automatically going to apply all those preconceived notions from that previous experience onto this new experience.
Mm-hmm. Understood, definitely.
So we can't, you know, it's almost like we can't help ourselves. When people say, I just can't help it, when they go gamble or they overeat or whatever, I just couldn't help myself. It's because these basic biological drives kick in, and until we can separate that hormone dump that's, you know, biological, you know, and maintain a calm, cool, collected interior to be able to get to be rational, we have all of these things that we've brought along the way in our lives that when that money gets into our internal pile, we've got all of these things that we've put on it from childhood without us even realizing that's what's happened.
So to achieve a different outcome, is it a matter of reprogramming the subconscious mind or is it a matter of directing the conscious thinking mind in a whole different direction?
You've got to go to the subconscious level because mm-hmm. your conscious, you know, like willpower, people like intestinal fortitude, discipline, that's a conscious activity.
Mm-hmm.
But most of everything that we do is subconscious. You know, we know that we can only concentrate on 7 to 9 things plus or minus 2 consciously. So almost every other thing we do is subconscious and it's pre-programmed. So we have to identify where the hang-ups are. We have to do that consciously, because if we don't know we have a problem, we can't work to solve it.
Right.
And then we have to explore not only what's happening, but what triggers that response. And then we have to identify what the new behavior is that we want to have to generate the outcome we truly desire. And then we have to attach that to the trigger.
Okay,
that's how we have to overcome that. So it's because, you know how, like, I know that sometimes my mother drives me crazy, and all I have to do is see her caller ID, and then I just become unglued because I know it's going to be an issue. There's a problem. Ow, the roof is leaking. Oh, my God, the dog got out. Can you go down the street and get the dog? It's always something.
Right.
And so because I have this in my head that my mom only calls when there's a problem, that as soon as I see the caller ID, and she could just be calling to wish me happy birthday,
mm-hmm.
but I see the caller ID, and I come unhinged. Like, and I could be doing anything, and people freak out sometimes when I do that because I just lose my mind because of all of this past conditioning. And, you know, I could choose a different response, and I had worked on it for a while. And then when I'm not disciplined enough or I'm not conscious at it, then those old drives and behaviors come creeping right back. And then here you go, one ring, caller ID. And I used to have like a special ringtone for her, like the Wicked Witch, you know, from the Wizard of Oz.
You manifested that.
I mean, I was heavily invested into these negative behaviors. Let me tell you.
I like it.
And so I had to get rid of that because I was trying to desensitize myself from the trigger, which was, you know, seeing my mother trying to get in touch with me, because it immediately turns my world upside down because I know it's going to, like, I'm predicting that it's going to be a negative experience. And so you know, it's that deep. It goes that deep. It has several layers. And, you know, I will tell you, people's problems with money have nothing to do with money.
I totally agree. It's just, yes.
It's just a manifestation of something else in their lives that they're unsatisfied with or trying to overcome or compensate for. Your greed isn't necessarily greed. It's your fear of loss without control. Somebody took your coin collection and stamp collection. And now as a kid, you can't rationalize that because you don't even have the prefrontal cortex ability to go, well, it's for the greater good of the family and I can always go buy another coin collection or another stamp collection. You didn't have that ability, you know, physically, because your brain just isn't that far developed yet to be able to come up with that as a justification for what happened to you. All you did see was, my stuff's gone and somebody took it from me, and I'll be darned if I'm ever going to let that happen again. I mean, you even said it yourself with conviction.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to take from me again. But you, when you had profit, couldn't take it off the table.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your worth dynamic coming in.
Fascinating. All right, so I took notes while you're talking. And thank you. Send
I heard
me the bill
pencil
later.
On the counter.
Did you hear that? All right, so the process is, from what you just said, is – the subconscious mind will dictate our experiences when it comes to money. And the key is to identify our financial blind spot, but you have to do so consciously, because if we're not aware, then we don't even see the blind spot. And from then, we look at what are the triggers, you know, what triggers that response within us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we identify that trigger, we then can create a new behavior that we desire to have rather than the initial experience, right? So we have that. So, for instance, I say when I invest in another stock, I say, well, you know, I'm buying the stock. It's, let's say, for example, $5 a share. I know it's going to go to 10, and I have to be disciplined at the time when it hits my trigger price to sell it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, just
and the beauty of electronic trading is you can pre-program that. So you can save yourself that other gambling nature or that other risky issue by pre-programming your trade. I mean, that's how you can overcome dealing with that.
Good.
You know, I know what my in is. I know what my out is. And now it's not left up to you to go back into your account when the money hits the price you think. You can just, and that's one way that you can protect yourself from yourself until you have the result. Because the key isn't just being able to identify and determine what the new thing is. Now we have to condition that new behavior. So we have to do it over and over. So we have to, if we can, create a sample trigger and practice the response.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, I've always said that. Yeah, we got to experience it. So let's break it down for, let's say some of our listeners are out there and their situation's a little different. You know, let's say whenever, and I read a statistic where when 80% of salespeople reach their monthly goal, which generally is whatever their expenses are, that they stop selling. So there exists a notion, you know, that, and maybe it comes from a sense of worthiness or what have you, that people have in their mind how much money they want to manifest on a monthly basis. And that comes in, and then it's for some reason, nothing more comes. You know, they either stop their efforts, they stop doing what they were doing to attract that money, or like you say, they're using credit cards and accumulating debt. You know, to that listener out there, what would you say to help them affect change and to affect a whole new experience within 2 minutes?
Within 2 minutes, yes.
You got
Thank
2 minutes.
You for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Rein me in. Simply, the way we can do that is to by changing the affirmation, by changing what it is the manifestation goal is. And instead of just saying, I want, you know, a $5,000 paycheck this month in sales, or 10 or 2,000, whatever their number is based on what they do for a living, and add just a couple of words and say, you know, I desire to earn $5,000 or more this month. And that or more allows the universe to say, oh, okay, well, we already did the five, but here's some more. Here's six. Here's another $1,000. Here's another $2,000. Just tweak it up a little bit by just changing the desire, the manifestation that you're putting out in the universe. So you're allowing the faucet to continue to flow.
I like that.
How's that? How's that?
I like that.
20 seconds.
Yeah. That was brilliant. That was a 20-second brilliance right there. So is the mind going to be stuck on that 5,000? Like, so you're saying I desire to manifest 5,000 a month or more. Is the brain going to get locked in on that $5,000 number and just give them that?
It won't, because while that is a tangible number, what we're trying to do is just keep the faucet open. So by saying, you know, $5,000 and more allows for that overflow. So we're not saying shut off the pipeline when we're dealing with this manifestation. And the key truly is that, you know, until our financial thermostat rises to whatever that next level is of worthiness. So once we feel worthy of the five, you know, if we get five and we're like, oh, whew, I made it, because we didn't feel quite worthy of it, you know, we're gonna shut that off ourselves by our behaviors, by our physicality that changes. But by using the and more clause, if you will, onto the manifestation, it opens up our mind to the possibility, so our bodies stay open to that. So it's not so much about the universe shutting off the faucet, but us keeping the reservoir open to be recipient of more.
Mm-hmm. Heather, you are just a wealth of information. You are amazing, and you're the real deal. I love how you've been able to manifest in your life what you have. And is there anything that you can point to, a book or a course that you took that just really changed your life when it came to thinking about money and manifesting?
Well, the book that's been most influential in my life had nothing to do with money, but more about passion and drive and commitment and conviction. And it's a book that I read every year as my sharpen the saw. It's a big book, but it's the one that's made the biggest impact in my life, and I've been reading it for 30-something years now, and that's Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
Oh, I love that book. Wow. And you read that annually, did you say?
Yes, it's my sharpen the thought every January. I've gotten it down to under 60 hours now that I've been able to get it knocked out. So, I mean, I have it mostly memorized, but, you know, I because I've read it probably, like, I don't know, 50 times. Because some years, like when I went through my divorce and I've had real, you know, very traumatic stuff, I kind of use it as a way to go and refocus myself and my priorities as to where I want to be in life. You know, and to get back to that unshakable foundation that the heroine Dagny Taggart has about, you know, making the railroad work. So that's been the book that's been most influential in my life, for all of my life, because it's about economic freedom, it's about personal freedom, and it's about responsibility, taking ownership for one's own decision. And that's really big in my world. And so that's probably, you know, the single most important book that I've read.
Wow. So speaking of taking ownership and responsibility, you are big into Financial Literacy Month. Is that right? Can you share with our listeners? I would love everyone to know more about that from you and how you're involved with that.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about it. April is National Financial Literacy Month, and we'll be kicking it off on Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Sharon Lecter, who everybody knows from Rich Dad, Poor Dad fame, Three Feet from Gold, and she's doing a ton of work with the Napoleon Hill Foundation. And National Financial Literacy Month is all about bringing awareness to personal finance and money management. And as you know from what we do at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation, is we teach brain-based financial literacy. So it's different than just learning how to balance your checkbook. As we've shared today, it goes so much deeper than knowing how to spend less and save more, because everybody knows to do that, but we don't.
Yeah.
And because we manage our money on concepts and principles that have nothing to do with money. And most of our stuff is fear-driven. And so when we can identify what it is that we do and find those financial blind spots in the road, which is pretty simple. It's not easy, because it requires some exploration and probably digging up of some painful childhood memories. But it's simple. The process is simple. And we can, if we track our finances, what gets monitored gets mastered. And National Financial Literacy Month is all about highlighting the opportunities that people have when they understand how their money works. And so we do a lot with that. Sharon was on the President's Council for Financial Literacy for several years. And I'm excited to have her on, because she has a Family First Foundation that gives parents the tools to teach their children about money, because it's about future generations.
Sure.
That we need to be able to be good stewards of our society, because let's face it, our parents haven't, when we look at what's going on in our economy and how we've allowed folks off the hook for their financial mistakes. Because without the pain of consequence, we can't redirect where we need to be.
Yes.
We don't know where the fences are.
Good point. I like that. And where can people find out about this?
Well, I had the radio show is at unlockyourwealthradio.com. And if you want brain-based financial literacy tools to help you get where you need to be to get your money mind right so your wealth and happiness will follow, you can do that at unlockyourwealth.com.
Heather, you are fantastic. Thank you so much for the therapy you gave me and for the insight for our listeners as well. Thank you. Keep up the great work, and I hope you come back on the show.
My pleasure. You can count on it. And we need a visit from you next season as well.
I'm looking forward to it, always.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, folks. Heather Wagenhall, she's fantastic. I want to share with you that coming up in June, the 4th through the 9th, I've been invited to be a guest presenter on the Law of Attraction Radio Network Wealth Creation Cruise. It is a 5-day cruise. We are leaving Boston, and we are headed to St. John, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. So please join us. If you want more information, email me. My email is jadensterling@gmail.com, jadensterling@gmail.com. Next week, we are taking off and we will not be broadcasting live. However, the following week, Wednesday, April 3rd, I have the amazing Laura Atchison on my show. She has unique ideas about keeping your best-selling book a bestseller. And I met her right before I launched my book, and I wish I'd met her months before. So if you have a book inside you wanting out, you will surely want to listen in. I wish everyone a joy-filled Easter, and remember to go to www.jadensterling.com and enter your email to receive my free downloadable ebook, Soul to Profit, a guide to discovering your soul's purpose, develop your gifts, and monetize your message. Have a fantastic week, and remember, everyone, do those things that fill your wallet and your soul. Take care.
Ah, the snooze button, our old friend. You've showed us patience, postponing the monotony of morning traffic, putting off the bland and boring breakfast for just 5 more minutes. Thank you for all you've done, but your services are no longer required. There is finally a breakfast worth waking up for. The triple cheese and hash brown breakfast burrito with provolone, cheddar, pepper jack, and a crispy hash brown. Taste it before it's gone at Jack in the Box. Limited time only, participating restaurants.